everyone. My name's Nick Brandt. I'm one of the senior leaders here at Circuit Riders. I want to welcome you to the Circuit Rider podcast. If you don't know us, we're a YWAM missional community based here in Huntington Beach, California. Our passion is Jesus. Our mission field is our generation. And we believe our opportunity is now. I want to sincerely thank you for being a part of our broader community. Enjoy this podcast.
Wow. How are we doing, crew? How's this zone doing tonight? I was like, so much joy. This zone, how are we doing tonight? Wow. This zone, are you doing good tonight? Yeah. How's this zone doing over here? Well, tonight, guys, we want to keep jumping into this subject of love. How many of you appreciated Derek's last message last week? 1 Corinthians 13. And we want to dive a little bit deeper into what Paul is telling us about love, because if we miss love, what we learned last week, we're nothing. Yeah. Right? Nobody wants to be at the end of their life and they were successful, but they were a jerk. Here's this guy. You know, we didn't want to talk to him. I avoided his calls, but man, he was successful. The chief defining attribute of the Christian should be love. And what Paul is getting at in this text is he is calling every single one of us to be loved. Now, here's the thing. A lot of the most simple concepts in Christianity, we start to glaze over and we want the deeper thing. This is a little bit what Paul is combating in this 1 Corinthians 13 text. We're going to look at it together. Is he's combating this fascination with powerful things. And then when simple things like love are brought to the forefront, people get bored. Right? Because all of us want to see a miracle for sure, right? If someone received a miracle tonight, would that be an exciting night? Yes. But you know what? We could live without the miracle. What you cannot live with is you cannot live without love. Think about it. The thing that you most want tomorrow, the thing that we almost want is love. But why is it sometimes the most difficult thing to give? I'm going to reread last week and then I'm going to highlight the two verses we're going to get into. 1 Corinthians, can I just jump right in? Is that okay tonight? No fancy intros. Sorry. Next week, they'll be very fancy. 1 Corinthians 13, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, man, that's some pretty serious gift. Can you imagine just like asking someone any question, just prophetic abilities, like I'm ascending to the heavenly realms. And I got a fresh revelation. They're saying, even if you knew someone with that kind of prophetic power, which that doesn't quite exist, but if they did, it would matter nothing. If I have all the faith so as to remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I gain away all I have and I deliver up my body to be burned, meaning I even get martyred but I'm not a loving martyr, I've gained nothing. If we don't love, we have nothing in our life. And this is where Jesus begins to pick a bone with all of us in our life, is he's saying, hey, there is a chief definition I want you to define the success of your life on, and it's love. There is a chief thing I want you to look at. If your life really matters and means something, it's not what you're accomplishing, it's how you're loving. It's how you're loving. I mean, and I think it's so odd to think this way in the West. I never end my New Year's and look back and go, how loving was I this year? It's always, what did I accomplish this last year and how much more do I want to accomplish this year? But what Jesus is saying, hey, in my kingdom, when you come and see me face to face at the end of your life, I'm not going to say, how big did you grow the Bible study? How big did you grow the church? How successful was the business? He's going to ask you, did you learn to love? He's going to ask you, do you know what love is? How much did you give away your life in love? But how many of you know that love does come natural, but doesn't come natural? There are some kind of loves that are easy, and there are some kind of loves that are hard. Are you tracking with me? Yes. Like, these are the two verses we're going to look at. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable. Or resentful. Now, some types of love are easy to give. C.S. Lewis wrote this famous book called The Four Loves. And in it, he describes that there are four primary ways in the New Testament, that four different ways they use love, and they're four different Greek words. And what's so difficult for us as Americans to understand sometimes what the Bible is talking about love is we really only have two kinds of English words for love, love and affection. But in Greek, there are these more specific definitions of love. And if you're reading the New Testament in English, sometimes you miss, and we lump all these definitions of love into just this one word. And here are the four. Number one, this is the easiest kind of love to give. It's called sorge. And sorge love is like familial love. It's love that you didn't really earn. It's just kind of love you're born into. For example, how many of you don't like someone in your family? Don't raise your hand. It's temporary, right? But it doesn't matter. No matter how angry I am with my brother, I still love my brother. No matter how angry I am with my sister, no matter how crazy the fight, I still love my sister. Well, that's the easiest love to give. I love you because I owe it to you because you're family. That's like the most basic love. Some of you are like, that's hard for me. Okay, no, let's keep going. The second is philia love. And philia love is friendship love. And a lot of what that kind of love in the Greek is talking about is people coming together on a common interest of something. If you look at most of your friendships in life, the reason you're friends is not that there's not genuine care, genuine love for each other, genuine, affection for each other, but that usually you come together with friends for a reason. Right? You work together, you have the same passions, you have the same interests. Maybe you're in a similar season of life, right? Maybe you're the only young people at your church. I don't know what it is, right? But there's some kind of reason that has bound you together. And there's the third one, eros, which is sexual or romantic love. Now, eros love is Gucci in one part of Christianity, marriage. Amen. One married guy. Amen. It's my brother-in-law. Amen, right? There can be romantic love, but for it to move to the next place, it's got to be in the context of marriage. And a lot of times when we think of the word eros, we think of lust, but eros is an amazing thing. Falling in love is an amazing thing if it is in the bounds of Christian marriage between a man and a woman. Eros love. Now, the hardest love to give is agape love. Man. This is the bummer love, because the other ones, something is compelling me to want to be a part of it. There's some kind of feeling attached to it that helps me want to be attracted to give that kind of love. For example, I'm obligated in my family. I want to give love. Friendships, well, I enjoy being with them because of our shared interests. Falling in love, I'm infatuated with my wife. I love being with her. I love romantic love. I love dates. I love looking at the sunset. I love almond milk lattes on Sundays. I love it all. So amazing. I love a little kiss. Only, is that okay to say? She does give me kisses. There's hope for you, right? I love all of that, but now we get to agape. And agape is not based on feelings. It's full of feelings, but it's not dictated by feelings. The top three loves, there's some feeling that's primarily driving those types of love. But agape's root is something different. It's your choice. One writer reflecting on what C.S. Lewis puts like this. Agape could be defined as charity. Everyone say charity. Charity. However, we often think of charity nowadays as giving away money or things, which doesn't encompass at all what agape is about. Agape love is unconcerned with the self and concern with the greatest good of another. Agape isn't born just out of emotions, feelings, familiarity, or attraction, but from the will and as a choice. Agape requires faithfulness, commitment, and sacrifice without expecting anything in return. In the New Testament, the word agape is used over 200 times. So yes, while you need family love, you do need family love. And while you need friendship love, you do need friendship love. So important. And while eros, which I think is what our generation most wants to be around, romantic love. Like literally, I put an announcement. We got 200 people in our community Discord. I put an announcement in there. Monday morning meeting tomorrow. Please show up by time, 9:30 a.m. I spill a little bit of tea in there and say, who's praying for a wife? And it just starts blowing up with memes and arguments and people. This happened two nights ago. I said, how many of you would be willing for one of the married couples to set you up on a blind date? And all of a sudden, it's a tea fest in there. Everybody's pulling up. People I have not heard from years are now commenting in the Discord, having something to contribute to the community. And just to add, two people did volunteer. So we'll follow up with you soon. So the right? There's something that we're so attracted to. I mean, who doesn't love romantic comedies? I love romantic comedies. Sleeps in Seattle. You've Got Mail. It's the same movie, but I love them both, right? I love just, oh, like, you know, like Tom Hanks, it's her, dude, it's her, go get her, go get her. And then the little part with the magic sparkles around the hand, the top of the, whatever, the New York Empire State Building, there it is. I'm like, I love this. Little Cary Grant, little Audrey Hepburn, oh, I love this. But you know what? As much as you think you're craving that, you're craving something more. Because why can you feel so empty in the midst of family love? Why can you feel so empty and have friends but still feel something's empty in your heart and missing? Why can you be in love and still feel lonely at night and you're having an existential crisis going, maybe she's not the one. Maybe I don't really like her. And even worse when your feelings begin to wear off because you actually saw the real person. Right, because we all put our best foot forward for a while. You know, I always tell people you date someone until you see their bad side. That's when you know you're really in a serious relationship. You got to wait till they get mad. And when you get mad, that's when you see the real thing. And they get mad all of a sudden. You're like, oh man, sunsets and boba is wearing off real quick right now. And you're all of a sudden back to disillusion is because your soul is crying out for agape love. Why? Because agape love is the only kind of love that's unconditional. Because it's based in a choice, not based in an emotion. Agape love is the only kind of love that says your highest as the primary goal of that love. And the reason that we're wanting is 1 John tells us why. It says God is love. God is agape. See, your desire for love and my desire for love is not just rooted because we love love. It's because our soul is searching for God. Right now, an entire generation is searching for God and they don't even know it. Think about it. Every college student on every college campus right now is craving this love. And they're looking in all these different places to find it, but what their soul is really craving is God Himself. And the Christian life is a life marked by transformation from receiving the unconditional love of God so that it transforms you to begin to love like Jesus. See, we don't want to just be information Christians. Have you ever met someone who knows so much about Jesus but is so unloving? Man, those are too many yeses so fast. Right? So much anger. So much intensity. I remember, should I say something crazy? Man, this is all going to be on the internet. All right, so I remember one time I was with a young guy and I brought up, you know, how does God's sovereignty work? And I just kind of said, you know, it's kind of a mystery. We have free will and God is sovereign. We know He's directing the things in the world. And he got so angry with me because he felt that he had exactly figured out the interaction between our free will and God's sovereign will. And I'm going, this is God. He made the heavens and the earth. He's listening to every single prayer at once, but you now need to break relationship with me, yell at me, get frustrated with me because you disagree with me on one intellectual point of a major mystery, probably above our pay grade, when Job tells us his ways are above our ways. His thoughts are above our thoughts. See, it's so crazy how we can get caught in arguments of being so sure. And I feel like what God is saying is, yes, it's so important to strive after accuracy. Yes, so important to strive after truth. We'll talk about it next week. But if you're striving after all those things and you are not full of agape love, then what are you doing? Yeah. Then what are you doing? I remember watching this powerful documentary, and this documentary this guy has this kind of interaction of love, and he goes and talks to one of these sign guys. You ever seen these sign guys? They're always at the Staples Center at a Lakers game. And it's like their sign usually says, like, sometimes I'm like, oh, that's encouraging. John 3:16, for God so loved the world, he gave his only son. And I'm like, that's a good sign. Then he flip it over and like, you're going to burn in hell. And you're like, oh, wow. You know, and I'm for it. It technically is true if you're without Jesus. Like, I believe those things. I'm with them. You know, I'm not afraid to say that that's true. But what I'm saying is, though, is that I think that then they're out there and you're like, dude, I think you're maybe not loving people very well. And they're like, no, by saying the truth, it is loving. And I'm like, well, maybe does everyone really not want Jesus at Staples Center? Or is just maybe the way you're doing it, there's no desire for a real relationship. There's no desire to really serve someone. There's no desire, and there's this martyrdom complex that we say the truth and we stand on our holy hills, but what God is looking for is someone who won't compromise the truth but will lead with love. I mean, it's so offensive how Jesus walks with Matthew the tax collector. He just says, follow me. He didn't say, hey, follow me, and by the way, you're pretty much evil. Just before you start following, you're pretty much evil. Everybody hates you because you're crooked, you're full of greed, you betrayed your country, you betrayed your fellow Jewish people, you're rude, you're mean, you steal from the poor, but then you can follow me. He says, follow me, and he must have pulled him to the side somewhere in that journey of him becoming a real follower and disciple of Jesus, and he has a one-on-one saying, hey, you got to leave this darkness and this evil behind if you're going to follow me. But isn't it interesting how uncomfortable it is with how much Jesus leads with love? Not feelings-based love, choice-based love. Choice-based love. All of us are looking for this kind of love. Look at your neighbor and say, you need some of this love. Come on, a little more conviction. Come on, preach a little bit to your neighbor and say, you need some of this love. Man, that's what I'm talking about. But see, here's the problem. And this is what Paul's about to get at. Jesus, it's so easy for him to love in a sense because he's perfect. Right? Nothing blocking his perfect will and desire to love us. Pouring out love on us. Flowing love. I mean, it's just amazing. How many of you ever had a real deal encounter with God's love before? Where you just got overwhelmed. All right, so we all know, most of us know what we're talking about here. If you've not experienced that, I would love for you to experience that. But for us, it's difficult to love because of something called our sinful desire. Because there's something broken in us that is kind of gravitates towards being addicted to ourself. And this is what Paul is now getting at, is he's got to say, hey, it's not just good enough to say love, now I got to start to define it, right? Because there's so many moments in love that, like, if I just say, let's all love our generation. If I just go out right now down to Huntington Beach Pier and I just start holding up a sign, unite for love. Let's all love everybody. Everyone's like, yeah, dude, that's awesome. But as soon as I go, let's define love, that's where the argument starts to break out. And Paul is speaking into a certain context in this Corinthian church where there's arguments going on, there's strife going on, there's division going on. He's going, hey, it's not enough to say I'm a loving Christian. Let's really define what this looks like. I'm going to look at three different versions. Here's the first one. This is the NIV. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not honor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no records of wrong. Let's look at the ESV. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. I'm already like, we should just stop now. I'm already getting the conviction monster up here right now. I like the message. Don't hurt me. 1 Corinthians 13, 4-5. Love never gives up. Love cares more for others than for self. Love doesn't want what it doesn't have. Love doesn't strut. It doesn't have a swelled head. It doesn't force itself on others. It isn't always me first. It doesn't fly off the handle. It doesn't keep the score or the sins of others. So what he's getting into is sometimes when you got to talk about love, you got to first talk about what it is, but sometimes you got to talk about what it isn't. Sometimes you go, oh, being patient. You ever try to tell someone, like, give them some feedback about the way they're acting and they don't really get it? Have you ever tried to do it through, like, positive encouragement? Like, hey, bro, you know, just want you to know you're doing such a great job. So thankful for your leadership. It would be amazing if you listened a little bit more once. Sometimes when people are sharing, ask a few more questions. Oh, yeah, totally, totally. But every single time they talk for 2 hours. And you keep telling me, maybe you'd be good to listen a little more and ask a few more questions. But then sometimes people just don't get the back door. You got to go right through the front door. And you got to go, bro, every time I talk to you, you talk to me for 2 hours without taking a breath. It would be great in our friendship if you asked a question, maybe once every 25 to 30 minutes. I feel like I'm entering a crazy podcast as soon as you enter my house and I don't even get to speak back in this podcast. You invited me as a guest. You invited me to dinner. You invited me here. And now you are ranting for the next 2.5 hours. And all I have to do at the end is goes, wow, that was powerful. Or wow, I'm so sorry for how hard your life is. I'm not a backdoor person. Anyone a front door person? You need the front door. You do not do well with hints. You need directness for your life. So Paul is, for all of us, he's going, hey, for you backdoor people, I'm going to give you some positives. Love is patient, love is kind. But for you front door people, I got to give you some what love is not so you can get. But let's start with the positive. Number one, love is patient, love is kind. Now, if you know Paul, right, like this church would have known Paul. They would have heard a bunch of his sermons. They would have known exactly what this meant when they heard it. He's pulling on two major themes that he continues to highlight about God. Number one, that God is patient. And this is what he means. He does not give us what we deserve, but he long suffers with us, hoping that we will repent and turn to him. Meaning right now, because of our sin, we all deserve death. We all deserve wrath. We all deserve to be judged. But he doesn't knock on our door and say, hey, for the last 20 years, you've done this. Enough is enough, you jerk. I'm judging you right now. No, he lovingly is patient with us, not manifesting anger towards us, but instead moving in kindness, hoping that one day his kindness would lead us to repentance. Do you ever wonder sometimes, like, why such good things happen to bad people? No, for real. Like, I've had friends that are not necessarily the nicest people. They made fun of God. They mocked God. And yet their life seemed to be going amazing and my life was going horrible and I was in ministry. And it was so confusing. It's because love's kindness has to do with something else, has to do with his mercy. Giving undeserved mercy in many different ways. Right now, did you know that God enjoys blessing people who don't know him yet? With no strings attached. There will be no one that goes to heaven. There will be no one that goes to heaven that God has not blessed in some way right now. No strings attached. I want to bless. I want to show mercy. I want to show kindness to you. And he's not doing it just so that you would get saved. He's doing it so he hopes that you would get saved. But he's not being manipulative. He's doing it out of the genuineness of his heart. So the first thing that God is calling each of us to be operating in is this sense of patience with other people, this sense of long suffering with other people, and this calling to be actually kind, to give mercy, to be gracious, to do nice things for people who deserve it and do not deserve it. But a lot of times what's standing in the way of us doing those things is what comes next. Love does not envy. What is he saying there? Rivalry, offense, division, it does not want what it doesn't have. I think so much of the time we live in a culture of competition. But the culture of love is not competition, it's celebration. Now I'm telling you right now, isn't it exhausting being in a culture of competition before? Have you ever been in a job, even at a church, where everyone's kind of jockeying for a position? Everyone's like going up to the pastor, Pastor, that was the most amazing sermon I've ever heard in my entire life. Right? And you know it's because he wants the pastor's trust so that he gets the next job for the pastor. And then you go up there like, Pastor, I mean, it's true, most anointed, but man, I was just getting encountered because there was power breaking out everywhere. And there's this weird jockeying that starts to come into the church and flattery and all this kind of weird stuff because people are wanting a position of power over love. Being in a job, it's so crazy how long you can go in life without somebody stopping and celebrating what you've done. It is so weird that when I walk around UCLA and I say hi to somebody, they're like, what do you want? Isn't it crazy in California, if someone stops us and says hello to us, we immediately are suspicious. They're gonna sell us something, they're in a cult, or they're unstable as an individual, I need to get away. That's how much cynicism we have. It's so odd for someone to stop and just say, hey, you're just doing an amazing job. I just want you to know that. I remember I was in this doctor's office, and this surgeon was doing an operation on a family member, and they said it was going to take 2 hours, and they came out in about 45 minutes, and they'd done this miraculous surgery. He was so talented, and I thought like something had gone wrong, and that's why he was coming out, and he came out and was like, no, went amazing. And I looked the doctor in the eyes, and I said, doctor, like, I'm talking about the most plain Jane celebration. I said, doctor, man, I'm so thankful for you. You are an incredible doctor. Thank you so much for the love and care that you showed my family. The dude started to cry. Full-grown man starts to get tears coming into his eyes. Working at one of the most successful hospitals in California. Why? Because there's a famine of love in our generation. And there is a feast of competition about what can I get? But God's saying, hey, you got to leave the culture of competition if you want to be loving and join the culture of celebration. Yes. Number two, love does not boast. Gordon Fee puts it like this. It suggests self-centered actions in which there is an inordinate desire to call attention to oneself. Oh, man. It is crazy what people do to get attention on themselves. Just scan the trending on YouTube's thumbnails on the lengths that somebody will go to get views on themselves. And have you ever asked why do they make these YouTube videos? I know they make money, but so much effort to get me to laugh for 10 minutes maybe, and maybe come back and watch again. I mean, dude, when I started doing all these scoutings, I was filming these commercials for these different gatherings. And I remember going up to LA, we were scouting these locations, and I stumble upon the venue that's a fake plane that influencers rent out to go and sit by and take a picture by the window to look like they're on a private plane. This is the generation we live in, that we will rent a fake building in a bad part of LA and stand in a nasty room and take a fake picture and put it online and show to the world, please look at me. Please look at me. It is bizarre. How many of you love these like Instagram versus reality or TikTok versus reality videos? I love those travel videos where it's just like the most beautiful waterfall and they scan over. It's just like tons of people just like bored and walking around and you're like ruining the moment. It is crazy what we do to hide the normalcy of life to say, look at me. See, envy is about wanting something that is not yours. Whether it's somebody or something, but boasting is about rubbing in other people's face what you have that you know they don't. So there's one thing to have influence on social media because you're serving your audience, but there's another thing, it's because you're trying to act like you're someone better than your audience. Can we keep going? It's not proud. Really, literally in the Greek, what proud means here is puffed up. Puffed up. I remember... I'm going to get in trouble tonight, but that's okay. I get in trouble every week. So here's the story. Puffed up. Knowledge puffs up. Knowledge puffs up. I remember meeting a new believer. He'd been saved for a year and a half. He was schooling me, not really, but he was trying to school me on the Bible. And he was so sure, and he was so unteachable, and he was hurting other people, and he was being rude. And I was trying to confront him on being normal, on being kind, on being loving and being gracious. And he kept using all these verses in the wrong way, trying to beat me over the head, because he listened to all these things and he let, instead of letting the information convict him and change him, he was just amassing it to beat other people over the head with it. See, knowledge, we live in the information generation. You can get whatever you want, and either that information humbles you so that you can serve others better, or it puffs you up and gives you a sense of being made better. Can I tell you something? All of the greatest theologians I've ever met are more humble now than when they started. The greatest academics that study the Bible and all these fancy seminaries, when I listen to them, they go, they have a humility from around the word, and they want to know if they're wrong so they can see things rightly. But when you're first starting something, it's amazing our resistance in wanting to learn and say that I know. Love is saying I don't know sometimes. Love is saying I have something to learn from you. Love is not coming in and trying to establish your expertise. It's actually establishing your humility before other people. Have you ever told, like, how many of you have talk tracks in conversations? Meaning you tell the same stories every time you meet new people. Like, you have a story that you know everyone laughs at. And when a conversation's weird and they haven't heard it before, you bust that story out and then you tell the story. I remember talking to one of our guys. And he always didn't know what to say after the first date with a Christian gal, because they would like share their testimonies and then he wouldn't know what to say anymore. So it would get really awkward and he'd kind of break up just because it was so awkward, not because he didn't know the girl. And so I said, well, bro, you're on a talk track. All you do is you try to show up with power and you try to show up that you're somebody and you kind of give your resume for a date. And then the next day, there's no more resume to give. You freak out and you run. Because the opposite of the culture of being puffed up is a culture of vulnerability. I guarantee your date would go so amazing the next round, but it's going to come at the cost of your vulnerability. I go, have you ever shared a vulnerable thought with anybody? And the guy was just like shaking, like, no. You know, like, and I'm like, well, that's how you get married. Vulnerability, buddy. It's not the six pack. It is literally you sharing your heart and asking to know about somebody else's heart. So instead of being puffed up, it's vulnerability. How could you position yourself not to look stronger than everybody, but to position yourself to be vulnerable and to serve everybody? Can we keep going? Love is not rude. I love that. Just so basic. So basic. We need to spend more time on this. We can be rude. I can be rude. Rudeness bothers me. Do you ever say things to rude people like, hey, quit being rude? Like, it makes me feel awkward when people are rude, especially when men are disrespecting their girlfriend or wife in public. Nothing gets me more frustrated than that. I'm usually like, yo, all right, you're having a bad day. But as soon as you raise your voice, that's fair game for me to get involved. I remember I was in Boston. And this guy was screaming at his girlfriend, falling down the street, saying, you're nothing, you're nothing. Nobody will love you. He's going crazy. And I'm on the other side of the street. And I literally am a lover, like no fighter in me. Like, if someone's going to beat me up, I'm just going to die. I don't know. Like, I just don't know. I'm skinny. I don't have a lot of muscle. I got no karate moves, no training, nothing, you know, like that. So I don't want to hurt them. I mean, I'd probably just run. I know it's sad, but if it's just me and that's the only thing to protect myself, I don't know what I'm going to do. But for some reason, something comes over me and I'm on the opposite of the street and I yell across. I say, you, yeah, you, knock it off right now. And he turns to me. It gets more funny though. I'm not even done yet. So then I get his attention. I'm like, oh no. And he turns to me and I was like, yeah, what are you going to do? Walk across the street? In my mind, I'm like, Jesus, force field. Do not let him come across the street. In the name of Jesus, I walk in the power of the Holy Spirit. And then I don't know why. I think, I don't know if I saw this from Dr. Phil. And I'm like, I'm just yelling at you because I love you, bro. I'm trying to help you, bro. I'm trying to help you. Now calm down. All right, calm down. I just start, But the point is, there's something powerful about just simple kindness. Like, I love to open doors for people. I one time had a girl lecture me on opening a door. Don't you open no door for me. I can open my own door. I don't get paid for this. I'm just opening the door. Like, I don't know you that well. Like, I'm oldest child. It could have been a man. I opened the door for men. It's okay. I do it equally for everybody. There's something kind about just being nice. About tipping. So quiet. No, Nick. Not tipping, Nick. And I will say, you know, everybody's got an iPad and I'm tipping for everything now. I'm just like, yo, man, you just handed me something. Do I tip you this? You know, it's like, it is intense. But right there, there's something about just basic courtesy. Looking a worker in the eye and acknowledging their existence at Disneyland. Hi, I know you're not Mickey Mouse. You're just a regular 25-year-old guy in a hot suit in 80-degree weather. You're doing a great job, buddy. Hey there, I know that you are not Cinderella, that you are just a broke college student wearing this dress to pay for your college. How are you? Are you doing well? It's amazing just talking to people in public and asking how they're doing. The other day, I'm in a grocery store. Guy's stocking shelves. How are you? So surprised I'm speaking to him. Like, you know, I'm talking to you. How are you? Good, I guess. Like, it's been so long. It's like one of those crazy movies where you're just like trapped on an island and haven't had human contact, right? This is what California is like sometimes. Saying hello is awesome. Why don't you say hello to the person next to you? Hi. Like, sometimes I walk into rooms in California and I feel like everyone just scoping each other out. Who's here? Oh, man. I could date her. Oh, man. Like, it's just so weird. It's so strange. I remember I stayed up in L.A. for like a month, and everyone in L.A. was like looking at me. Like, the nicer I dressed, and like the more confident I walked, like, man, who could that be? Maybe they can help me with something. Like, that's so California thinking. Who are you and what can you do for me? Versus, I'm just here to love people. I'm just here to love people. Some of my friends, they were just at this event and they were ministering to like A-list. What does that make us? I guess just like C-list. I don't know. A-list celebrity types and all these influencers and YouTubers. And my buddy, he's very direct. And so he just like comes up to people, doesn't even ask how they're doing. And his tactic is just like front door. He's a very front door individual. And he just comes up and just goes, hey, I know you're around all these people, but you're lonely right now and God loves you. And people just break down and start opening up to him. I don't know if you have that person where everyone just opens up to you. I have one of those. Like, every barber confesses their sins to me. I don't even tell them I'm a Christian. I don't know what that's about. But they just start having these super amazing moments during these crazy luxury moments. And even they are empty. And there can be a void of just simple kindness. Don't be rude. Have a culture of kindness. It is not self-seeking and does not insist on its own way. It's not me first. Gordon Fee puts it like this. It does not seek its own. It does not believe that finding oneself is the highest good. Wow. It is not enamored with self-gain, self-justification, self-worth. To the contrary, it seeks the good of one's neighbor or even more their enemy. Wow. Isn't it so crazy? We live in a culture where it is like punishment if you're not like getting to like pursue your dream. Like, I remember the first time I traveled like broadly and I asked someone like, what are you doing? They're like, I'm working for my family. I'm like, do you love what you do? No. And I'm like, oh, what? You're not pursuing your dreams? Your life is not about you? And I was so offended as an American talking to this foreign person, this other country. They were in Asia and they were loving their family and working through the family business to build a legacy. And somehow in my heart, because it wasn't about them, I was offended. Man, this is deeply ingrained in our hearts. Deeply ingrained in our hearts. We have a me first culture 100% in America. Just look at outrage culture. I get overwhelmed some nights. I just open up reels. The algorithm will get you. You watch one, it just starts sending you more, right? And it'll be like just protesters yelling at other protesters. And I'm just like, wow. wow, oh my word, this is horrible. And you just get down the rabbit hole of how much everybody hates each other. But then I had this thought. I wonder if everyone's tired of that actually. Because in every single one of, yeah, the videos have millions of views, but there's only like usually like 25 people outside just yelling at each other. I wonder if most of America is waiting for someone to actually speak some sense and say, hey, everything's not about us, it's actually about others. It actually isn't about how much you can get, it's about how much you can give. Because isn't it amazing the people that we really respect are the people who give the most? Like, we love people, we respect people if we want to be where they are, but the people that we hold as models, those people are always people who have given their life away to something bigger than their own. See, God is calling each one of us to have like an honest moment to go, how much of my own life am I living for myself versus how much of my success is actually about serving others? Last two, it is not easily angered or irritated. Man. Not easily angered. Gracious. It's a culture of being gracious. A culture of being not so sensitive. Everyone is so sensitive right now. So sensitive. As a preacher, can I tell you, it's like sometimes so hard to figure out what I'm going to say. Because I got to say it for so many kinds of people, so many different kinds of backgrounds, and so many kinds of ages, and so many people on the political spectrum, and so many people with different views on different things, and so many different things. It's just like so many things. That I have to be like literally a linguistic expert to convey any kind of truth to anybody. But part of love is not being so sensitive, not being so easily angered, not being so disrespected so easily and just puffing your chest up and go, what did you say? What do you want? You don't appreciate me? You don't know my story? You don't know where I came from? You know how many times I've been somewhere and just someone is like, we're in a normal moment and I step on a landmine on accident. A landmine on accident. And the person just suddenly explodes. It's like all the anger from the last 25 years is now directed at me and they really think it's me. How dare you? Who do you think you are? I'm like your friend for 2 months only, all right? How could I have made you this mad in only 2 months? My dad would always say this during pre-marriage counseling. Remember, you've only been dating and engaged for a year. So that extreme moment of anger, probably you haven't even had really enough time to really hurt each other yet. So most likely it's the things that you're bringing from your past into this moment. See, there's something that actually is part of the culture of love is dealing with your pain so you don't put pain on everybody else. It's actually being real about what's going on, saying, hey, I got a problem. I got to resolve this. Because part of love is being emotionally resilient. Part of love is being in a room where someone insults you to your face and you keep on smiling. Do you know how much as a minister I have to do that? I remember one night I was preaching at Pepperdine. It was like 300 kids packed in this amphitheater. And I'm like preaching my guts out. Like there are nights where I preach. And then there are nights where I'm sweating through my clothes trying to preach. And like, I'm just trying to get people to like smile. It was a tough crowd that night. I was using every joke, every rebuke I had in my pocket, trying everything I could besides literally just tearing my shirt and just start to weep before them. Maybe that was the final move. And so by the end of the talk, I'm crescendoing in this moment. I'm raising my voice. I'm speaking outdoors like a really... junky microphone with bad sound. So I'm lifting my voice the whole amphitheater can hear. And right away, a guy beelines it right for me and says, hey man, you need voice lessons. Something's wrong with your voice. And I'm like, yo dude, like I'm insecure right now. I don't know if that went good. I'm just 24 years old. I don't know you. I don't know why you're so passionate about my vocal coaching. Please step away from me. Everything in my body wanted to go wrong time, freak, get away from me. I know you never have these thoughts, but I do. I'm crazy apparently. But instead I have to smile and go, I remember saying it. Do you ever say something but your mind is in a completely different track? I'm shutting down all what I really want to say and I remember smiling going, wow. I remember saying this, wow, thank you so much. I look forward to my vocal coaching future. But love is not always saying what you think. It's my culture. Oh. We're passionate. We're a passionate culture. Oh, man. My wife is Sicilian. Very passionate culture. I remember the first time I heard my wife and her mom argue on the phone. They get off the phone. I go, Emily, you will never speak to your mom like that again. I'm thinking like the relationship is over. Like no one talks like that to each other. Italians do, but I didn't know that yet. I'm just a normal white guy. We don't talk like that in my house. And I remember, she goes, no, you just don't understand. It's Italian. The next morning, her mom calls. She puts it on speakerphone to make a point. And she's like, hi, honey. Great. How are you this morning? Like the last night's conversation never happened. Never happened. And I was like, I'm in a different universe. I don't know what universe this is. Right? There are some cultures that are a little bit more passionate than others. Latinos can be passionate. I love it. Italians, very passionate. Mediterranean folks, very passionate. Middle Eastern, very. Basically, the entire world, except white guys, are very passionate. But you know what, though? But you know what? Here's the thing. Is I couldn't handle always my wife, and then I have like this German intensity. Like love to me is just telling you the truth straight up. So sometimes like I deliver feedback to my wife and it would be like just so hurt. Like what, how could you, do you even love me? And then sometimes my wife would just say the most emotional, intense thing to me. And I'd be like, how could you ever say that? But part of love is learning how other people hear things. Part of love is finding out and doing the effort to go, how do I say this in a way that you feel love? So much of us, we stop growing in love because we're so interested in defending our motive. But it's not about what you said, it's about how you said it. And what it's more about is about how they heard it. If you want to be loving, it's not about your intention, it's about what really happened and how they took it. I can try to be the nicest guy, but if the person I'm loving in front of me takes it in a bad way, that's not real love. My heart is loving, but God is calling us into a maturity of love where people actually feel loved. I remember someone rebuked me one time. They're just tearing me to shreds. I mean, to shreds. Like I was doubting my salvation. It was bad. Not really, but it was tough. And I mean, it was long rebuke, like long-winded, multi-paragraph rebuke with a seeming anger. And then they pause in the middle of it as they're just completely undressing my life and giving me the biggest beatdown ever. They go, I'm only telling this because I love you. And they go, you know I love you, right? Right? I'm like, yes, yes, I do love you. I mean, you love me. We're in love. I don't know. What's the right answer? I'm so confused, right? Technically, that may have been love, but love, I have to agree that that was love as well. And there is place for directness sometimes when someone's blind, for sure, but not every time. Not every time. When's the last time that you go, you know what? I don't want to just be someone who stands on the right of how I work. I want to actually learn how everybody else works and meet them where they are. Last one. It does not keep a record of wrongs. Does not keep a record of wrongs. Man, you know, sometimes the nicest thing you can do for someone is forget. The nicest and most loving thing you can do for someone is sometimes forget. Me and my wife, we have this agreement. We never judge each other at each other's lowest moments. They're off the table. So when we have an argument, if she had a night where I just lost my mind and I just like said a bunch of stuff, I don't know what I'm doing with my life and all this stuff. She can't come back there and say, hey, you're not a confident leader. Because that was my weakest moment. How many of you want to be held to your weakest moment? How many of you want to forgive, but like always in the file cabinet is that thing that they did? So if the argument gets intense enough, whip that out 3 years ago. right? Sometimes the most loving thing you can do is forget, and forget when they don't deserve it. Some of us are waiting for an apology that will never come. And it's, trust me, it's not love to hold on. It's love to forget and move on. It's love to forgive. So can we get practical for a moment? Let's get practical for a moment. Let's talk about how this really looks like in life. All right. Can we do like a little like life coaching for a moment? How to be more loving. Look at your neighbor and kind of give him some coach eyes for me real quick. And just kind of assess him a little bit. And just go, are you ready to be more loving? Because there's a skill set to love. There's a skill set to love. Let's look at some of these skill sets. Let's talk about the first one. Everybody say listening. We tend to believe that love is always through talking. But a lot of times, some of the most amazing moments where someone feels loved is when they're heard and understood. I remember giving a guy a challenge one time. I said, for every story you want to tell, you have to ask two questions. And literally, he went into a meltdown. He did. He went into a meltdown. He couldn't imagine a world where he couldn't say everything he was thinking and actually had to listen to someone. Like I do this for some of the guys at Disciple. I go, rate your last week. How much of your week was asking questions versus how much of your week was telling everyone what you thought? Got so quiet. But I'm telling you, your girlfriend will love you if you learn how to listen. So many girlfriends are so nice. But they're like the audience at a Jimmy Kimmel monologue. It's just like they just show up and you just launch in. 2.5 hours, like, hey, good day for you too. Amazing. All right. All right, we'll move on. All right, so next one. Next one. How much can you make it about the person in front of you? Let's look at some basic skill sets. Number one, remembering people's names. An entire generation, I heard this thing. I'm not a names guy. I'm a faces guy. I'm so bad with names. But it's interesting. It's an epidemic in an entire generation. Everybody's bad with names. That's the truth. Let's just all have forgetting names anonymous right now. It's been 1 minute since I've forgotten someone's name and I should remember, right? It is hilarious, but remembering people's names and using people's names is an excellent way to love. I am classic for, hey, bro, hey, sister, hey, lady, hey, dude, hey, brother, hey, whoa. How many of you have introduced someone that you should know to your friend hoping they'd say their name? This is so real. So real. So I made a decision. I don't always live up to it. But I just said, you know what? I'm going to take a risk in loving people well and just going with the name I remember. And I'm going to say 70% of the time it is accurate. And those 70% of people feel very loved. And those 30% of people remind me of their name so I have a chance to love them well the next time. Number two, greeting people with intention. Do you know how many houses I've walked into of young people? And I walk into the house and everyone just sits there like no one entered the room. How many have walked into some kind of social gathering and no one acknowledges you? Come on, raise of hands. Go ahead. So I have to like awkwardly go to each person and go, hi, 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 hi. Hi, like sometimes I'm obnoxious, like everyone's just quiet, doing their own things on their phone. I'm like, hello, everyone's greetings. Nick Brent has arrived. Right? You join your friend at a social gathering and your friend doesn't introduce you to anybody. So you're just like over there in the corner. Faking that you have something to do, right? Like just. Are you good? Yeah, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm just taking care of some stuff. You know, no. No, no one liked your post. It's okay. Like, there's nothing to do. Right? Being loving is greeting people with intention. And how about this? Introducing people to other people. I remember telling a guy, I'm like, you need to make a friend. I'm like, you need a friend. I'm your only friend. And I befriended you. Do you know how to make friends? They said no. They didn't know how to make friends. And I'm like, you have to text someone and say, do you want to hang out? Go get something to eat. And he's like, well, what do we do? We do what we're doing. Talking. What are we going to talk about? I don't know, bro. Text somebody. Go to vacancy. Go to daydream. Go to neat coffee. Go to the beach. Go somewhere. Just somewhere normal. Not weird. Go somewhere in a public place. Public setting. Don't say, meet me in the bushes. Meet somewhere normal. And say, hey, would love to get you to know more. We all need some more friends. All right, I'm helping you tonight. All right, number three, asking thoughtful questions. Some of us want to be so authentic. So authentic, we just want everything to come naturally. But can I just say, asking thoughtful questions is not natural. Except for like people who are destined to be counselors, which we all have one friend that way. And we all call them with our problems. But for the rest of us, me included, I had to learn how to ask thoughtful questions. You know how I learned? This is embarrassing. I looked up on Google, thoughtful questions. What? Good questions to ask your friends. True story, my first date with Emily. I had a bad date like a year before. We were friends and we tried to kind of become more than friends and like go on a date, and I was a robot and it went badly. So we're like, maybe we're just friends. A year later, I came to my senses, and this time I would not fail. So I looked up good questions to ask someone you like on a date. I wrote them down in my phone. I had my phone on my lap open in case. In case I ran out of things to say, to glance at the question and look back up. So, tell me about what are your top three passions in life? You know, I was like, and you know what? As embarrassing as that is, it taught me how to be a thoughtful question asker. I think some of you need to Google thoughtful questions and ask your friend stuff. You're next to your friend and they tell you like, yeah, I'm from Ohio. And you're like, you're from Ohio? And they're like, we've been friends for 5 years. You visited my home 3 times, right? Like there's a thoughtfulness that we can bring to life. How can you make people feel celebrated? All of us desperately want someone to show up with donuts when we have a big accomplishment and just celebrate us. No, like literally every time someone comes up to you after you did something great, they're like, dude, you did such a great job. We all kind of don't know what to do. We're like, it's all God, bro. It's all God. It's all God. All right. See you later, man. Like, it's, they get so awkward, but yet all of us inside want to be celebrated. You got an A on a class you thought you would fail. For me, it was Hebrew 2. I passed that class. I want to celebrate. Praise God, I'm with a celebratory wife. You know what she said? We need to celebrate with ice cream. But how many of us in life are waiting for someone to celebrate us? But what if we just started becoming serial celebrators of other people? That sounds wrong with the word serial. Habitual celebrators of other people. How about this? How can you make much of somebody else and even more of Jesus? How can you be in a group setting and like just make that your one goal to leave that night with blessing somebody? I had a friend who was a pastor, and what he would do when someone was down his church is he would form what he called a blessing gang. Yeah, he's older, so it's kind of a bad name, but it's still cool, right? Blessing gang. And what he would do is he would get 10 of his friends to write out speeches of how much their friendship meant and what kind of man that person was. He would gather them to their house, and they would all take turns reading over that guy. How amazing they were. Blessing them with their words. They would break down weeping and develop new friendships and often burst out of their dark season into a new season. Don't underestimate making a big deal about other people. Dude, value love more than excellence. Sometimes there is so much pressure on a stage to make it entertaining everybody, but sometimes you just gotta stop everybody and celebrate a family victory. Let's just practice. Hope, Donathan, would you stand up for a moment? Hope is our Carry the Love leader here in Southern California, Northern California. She has been plowing for years. She did 8 weeks of peer tour. She did like 10 weeks of tour organization before that. Everyone got to rest afterwards. Instead, she decides to gather everybody from the entire tour to LA for a full week of evangelism, led that whole crazy thing. 70 people got saved, should be taking a break now, but now is organizing another festival in Tijuana, Mexico in a month, uniting all these pastors. She's a boss. She's a boss. Let's just give a hand, come on. She's a boss. No, you gotta stand up, you gotta receive it. It's awkward. This is what it's like. Just receive the love. Receive it. You're doing so good. I know it's so awkward. Stand strong. Stand strong. All right. You did so good. You made it through. Right? All of us hate that, but we love that. And we can do that a lot more for a lot more people. Man, can we keep going a little bit more? How can you make others feel honored and covered? One of the greatest ways we can love people is when others are brought up in gossip, shutting the gossip down. Oh man, you will be a best friend to so many people. You know how many rooms I've been in? And it's always through a Christian lens, like, yo man, I'm just concerned. Just concerned about Sally as a brother in Christ. She's a jerk. She's all by herself. I think she might be a narcissist. I'm not sure. We need to be praying for her. And you're like, yo, you just slandered somebody. That's what that's called, slander. Last time I checked, you're not a counselor. Do not use the word narcissism. You watch one YouTube video on identifying narcissists, and you've identified everyone you don't like as a narcissist. That is so true. You have to go to college to learn that. Like, there's degrees, there's verifications, there's tests. All right, so there's a moment to going, hey, I've been in these moments, and it is so awesome to be a part of it, so awkward, and it's so amazing. Someone will say, hey, don't ever slander someone in front of me again like that. They feel awkward, but everybody else feels loved and feels covered. How about one more practical? Can you handle one more practical? How about this? How about letting little offenses bounce off of you? Most people who are angry, and they're angry at me, I know that they're hurting. And I actually turn up my love. I have a game. How long will it take me to win you over? And the more mean you are to me, the more exciting my game becomes. No, literally, it's a game. It's like if you're shut down, you won't talk to anyone, I'm just like, dude, you're on my hit list the next 5 Monday nights. Hi. Yeah, I'm talking to you. How are you? Good. Tell me, what does good mean? And I just will belabor with them awkwardly for 20 minutes, for 20 minutes. Do you know how many people have come up to criticize and be mad at me, and by the end, they were apologizing for being mad at me because I was so kind and so loving. Remember a guy came to me one time and said, dude, you sounded angry tonight. And I was like, I probably did. I'm so sorry. And they froze, not knowing what to do, not expecting that I wouldn't be defensive. And they go, you know what? Actually, you weren't that angry tonight. It was just, I think it was me. And I was like, all right, I don't know. What's your name, bro? And we become friends after that. It's amazing when you let a little offense bounce off of you and to turn up the love. Turn up the love. All right, you got 5 more minutes for me? Okay. I'm gonna do speed round of some contemporary challenges to love. Can we hit them really quick? Yeah. Really quickly. Number one, here are some things I want you to think about. Today's definition of love in America is this: love is the acceptance of all and the restraint of nothing. Love is the acceptance of all and the restraint of nothing. Catch this. Paul is saying that love is something and love isn't something. Love does have rules. The world's love has no rules. God's love does have rules. It looks like something specific. It looks like something specific. If you want to walk in Christian love, it is not good to accept everything. You have to line up with what the scriptures teach love is. Number two, Gen Z is such a creative generation. You naturally want to express yourself. It's literally how you were made. Like when I, my generation, if you posted to Instagram about preaching, literally all your friends judge you and say you have ambition. When I talk to Gen Z, they go, why are you not posting online? It's not a thought about self-promotion. It's just another avenue of self-expression. It's just creativity. Any Gen Z give me an amen on that? Amen. Amen. But here's the problem. The only way to know if you're not operating in love on your social media is the analysis of your heart, not your post. And you are going to have the one to say, am I posting in love or am I posting to be somebody? Am I posting for me or am I posting for others? Can I tell you why I don't post on my social media? Is I don't feel like it's not about me yet. I don't feel like I can actually post without wanting people to see a little bit of me, so I don't post. Because I just rather not be about me and just be about other people. I don't need that. I don't want that. Because I don't even want to mess with my motive on that. I want to challenge you. As social media masters that you all are, check your heart on that. Lastly, and here's where I want to end on this. Gen Z is the loneliest generation in history. The mental health data on how lonely Gen Z is when they should be the most connected generation ever. Think about how many ways that you have to connect. Let's just do like 10. Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok. You could email technically. Texting, WhatsApp, GroupMe, Discord, virtual reality. Everyone's like, what, virtual reality? Yeah. MySpace, technically it's open. All right. Right, do you know how many creative ways to contact, to get to know people? There are so many dating apps now. So many dating apps. It's unbelievable. Dating apps for Christians. There is no excuse for why you cannot meet or be loving. How can we be so connected? Everyone is at our fingertips. So many places to gather. So many different clubs. So many workout classes. So many occasional events in community. So many places, yet we are so lonely. It only can mean one thing. Is there's a lack of love. It's a lonely generation because it's a generation crying for someone to love them. And here's our challenge tonight. Jesus stepped onto the human scene when no one loved him. In fact, he was hated. He was mocked. He was criticized. His followers that followed him, as soon as it was a negative thing and there was a bad connotation with following Jesus, they all fled as he died. And on the cross, he is dying, giving his life to forgive the sins of the world. And he's still living, 1 Corinthians 13, and says, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. Jesus planted the first flag of perfect, unconditional love for all humanity to see. The thing that they were craving, he put on full display and said, you can run after me. You can run after me. I will love you. I will love you. I will give you the, I will not just put up with you because I made you. I'm not just going to put up with you when your interests align with me. I'm not just going to put up with you because you could bring something to me. He says, I'm going to unconditionally love you and give you everything in my heart, even if you reject me. Even if you reject me. And here's the cry of the Christian life, is that you, just like Jesus, would be the initiator of love in your generation. If you want to be a leader, don't look to social media. If you want to be a leader, look to love. We got enough influencers. We got so many influencers. We got so many sermons. We got so many academics. We got so many seminaries. We got so many sermons online right now. You didn't even come tonight. You can just type in online, epic best message on love. And you could have gotten Francis Chan weeping over you talking about love. Guaranteed better than my message tonight. You can get on to revivalhistory.com and find the best revivalists in all of human history preaching on love. But you know what a generation is looking for is someone to actually love. Yeah. Not someone to just talk about love, but to give love. The band can come up. See, the truth about love is it's going to require your time. The truth about love is it looks a lot more like hard work than we would like to admit. Do you know how many moments I'm sitting in my room on the, I live on the first floor. 20-something people live above me. Three-story house. We have 10 bedrooms. It's called the Evangeline. I'm sitting down there. It's 10 o'clock. I've done 8 hours of ministry. I've done 3 hours of work beyond that. I've gotten to talk to my wife for 45 minutes. And all of a sudden, a knock on my door. Hello? Come on in. What's going on? Deep pain, real problems, and in that moment, I do not feel like being loving. Not always. Sometimes, but not usually. But something in me goes, tonight is not about me, it's about that person. Tonight is not about me, it's about that person. And with smile, patience, kindness in my heart, my attention shifts from what I want tonight to what they need tonight. I wonder how many people right now are waiting for someone to initiate with them. How many people are crying out for a friend in college, but they just walk to class and walk to their dorm and they give the appearance because they don't want to stand out. They don't want to be a misfit, that everything's great. And that's why they drive home every weekend, because their only friends are their family. How many people have so many friends but no real friends? All their relationships are all around partying, drinking, getting high. One of the people I was talking with, teaching them to be friends, he goes, I don't know how to be friends with people for not getting high. I was like, that is so honest. Thank you for saying that. I'm going to teach you. I'm going to show you how. How many people are waiting for you to reach out? Now, here's the real deal. This is why I think we don't fully enter in to doing these things, is because if you decide to become love for other people and really give your life away, it will hurt you. It will be painful. Love is painful at times. Love is painful. 100%. This is why sometimes we avoid doing it, because all that investment could lead to nothing. All that sharing the gospel, all that friendship, all that investment, all that prayer, all that conversation may not lead to anything. They may just be like all the people in your past that backstabbed you or betrayed you or walked out of your life. But Jesus is calling you to something even higher. C.S. Lewis put it like this. He says, there is no safe investment, talking about love. To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly be broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give your heart to no one, not even to an animal. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will not become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. The alternative to tragedy, or at least the risk of tragedy, is damnation. The only place outside of heaven where you can be perfectly safe from all the dangers of love is hell. Sit in that for a moment. The only thing worse than the pain of love is to not love at all. This brings us all the way back to what Paul is saying at the very top. Paul is saying this. The first thing is that love suffers much. I cannot guarantee you that as you step out and you give people undeserving love, that they will be kind to you. I wished every time I was nice to someone mean to me, it converted them to being my friend. It doesn't always happen. Probably the most discouraging aspect of love is that so many times I can be there for everyone to celebrate them, but so few can come to celebrate me. It's amazing how maybe you can ask all the questions, but no one ever asks you a question. You can be there to give away all your opportunity, give away your platform, give away everything that you're working on, but no one ever gives you an opportunity. That's the cost of love. And what I'm telling you this is, I have more fulfillment standing on the hill with Jesus saying, my life will be defined by love, than it does living safe in my house, focused on myself, shielding myself from pain. Someone came to me, they were so afraid of being betrayed and hurt in relationships and stepping out and loving and sharing the gospel. And I said, you know what? You need to quit being so afraid of pain. Why are you so afraid of pain? You are resilient. Pain reminds me I'm alive. And usually that pain is a bummer for a night, maybe a couple days, maybe a week, never a month. But can I tell you, the pain that I've experienced from the few is worth me giving my life for the love of the many. Don't let five people from your past steal your future of loving your generation. Don't let one mean person who is a bad example of Christianity steal you from the essence of the Christian faith, which is to love. Love. An outraged generation needs love. A sexually confused generation needs love. The most mentally unhealthy generation needs love. The loneliest generation needs love. The most creative generation needs love. The most entrepreneurial generation in American history needs love. The most diverse generation in American history needs love. Whose love? Just mine? Nah, my hands are full, man. It's all of us. It's all of us. Can we stand together?
Thanks for listening to a Circuit Rider podcast. For our full library of podcasts and more information about the Circuit Riders, visit us at circuitriders.com. To access worship, messages, and training courses, visit us at circuitriders.tv. To get involved with the day-to-day of what we do or see what's happening across the globe, you can follow us at Circuit Riders on Instagram. And finally, don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll see you next time.